You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 15 August, UK GDP due 8 a.m. expected 0.8% year on year. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kieran Whitten. He's from Anchor. The AdvoTech update yesterday. I mean, look, not setting anything alight, but a good solid update. More important, stock at all-time highs. Philip Short from Flagship Asset Management. We're talking the long-term bull case for gold as central bankers shy away from US Treasuries. And then Paul Wilson from Sanlam Investments, multi-manager, trillions of US dollars that millennials and Gen Z will inherit over the next decade. Where's it going? This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: private rail operators to be given access to network by October. This and an official end to load shedding. An official end to load shedding is part of the package of measures aimed at boosting our growth. Business day, retail sales rise, but shoppers are still under pressure. Consumers should enjoy some relief as the Reserve Bank is expected to start cutting in September. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.4%, NASDAQ up 0.1%. Over in the East, it is mixed. Sydney is down 0.2%, as is Tokyo. Hong Kong is off up a third of a percent, and Tencent down almost a full percent. Commodities mostly red. Gold, $2,490. Brent, $80 on the nose. Platinum, $934. And palladium is green, $928. Rand, $1,806. Bitcoin, $58,500. And top 40 opening call at 200 points to the upside. That's a little over a quarter of a percent higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Kieran, appreciate the early morning time. The AdvoTech trading update yesterday. And it, as I said in the intro there, I mean, it's not shooting the lights out at the top end of the range. It makes almost R1 for the first 6 months of the year. But the stock certainly, I mean, it's trading at all-time highs. And by you know, a simple valuation, if you double the six-month HEPS and put it in, it's done a PE of a little over 15. Your take on AdvoTech on the sector, certainly looking good.
Good morning, Simon. Good to be back on the show. So the story in the listed private school space is largely around capacity at the moment and filling this capacity. AdvoTech's at around 80%, whilst Kuro's at 70%. Kuro obviously focusing more on the high schools, whilst AdvoTech is both tertiary and high schools. Mm-hmm. And there are big fixed costs in this sector. So as soon as capacity starts getting full, this does tend to fall to the bottom line, and more so for Kuro, which does have higher fixed costs. And AdvoTech, the expansion into Africa is going quite well, and so there is more expansion growth and organic growth we're seeing. CapEx does remain high. And Simon, just looking at the metrics that I went over, I really was struck by how positive these AdvoTech metrics are. Many of them, they're trending in the right direction. You've got return on equity increasing, and all their divisions have seen margins increasing. There's lower credit loss ratios. Provisions are starting to fall. The debtors book with that is starting to improve. Mm-hmm. The African margins are really expanding quite fast, so we expect them to focus more on this African expansion going forward. The balance sheet continues to de-gear. And it's actually managed to hold its rating over the past few years. And the share price return has largely been in line with earnings growth, which has been solid. I was actually quite struck. I wasn't quite certain how fast it has been growing, but it seems to be a good place to be invested on the JSE. And we do hold all three in the private school space, depending on mandates. But yeah, not a bad place to be invested.
And a nice spot. Now, take your point. I mean, particularly around capacity, that's a really, really a great observation. But also just education generally, my sense is, parents are going to spend, right? They want their kids to be as smart as possible. If the parent can spend, they will spend.
Yes, exactly. It's actually it can be quite a defensive sector in that sense. We all know how important the education is. And obviously with the missteps in the government sector, you could say, in secondary high school, but also in tertiary, that's where Stadio really, really is looking to benefit from the missteps in UNISA and gain market share there. And in terms of the economic environment, you know, it has been tough in South Africa the past number of years. So we expect the outlook to improve going forward, hopefully with rolling interest rates. And then I guess the other headwind has been the emigration out of the country. A lot of the people who can afford to leave have been leaving, which has been a bit of a headwind. But nonetheless, despite that, this is a sector, like I said, that is seeing solid growth at the moment and still has capacity to keep expanding.
Yeah, it's a good point. The growth isn't going to suddenly disappear. They've got that capacity. They've got those extra seats. We leave it there. That's Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Always appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Is this value in the education stocks? I mean, Kieran's making a great point. They've got that capacity. Have your vote. Have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in StanLib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. StanLib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Philip Short. He's a fund manager at Flagship Asset Management. Philip, appreciate the time today. Gold is absolutely having its day in the sun. And I want to dig into some of the nuances behind it. Historically, there's been a strong correlated with negative real rates. But ever since the Ukraine war in 2022, that has broken down, which is quite telling in many factors.
Yes, I think what that coincided with, not only the Ukraine war and probably a short flight to safety, but the fact that as a result of the war, the US and the Western allies sanctioned US foreign reserves, which included US debt owned by Russia. Basically, they confiscated Russian debt and said, we're not going to pay this debt to you anymore. And I think that a lot of people that held US debt or US treasuries thought, well, our holdings in US debt is or are not safe. Let's look for another safety asset, which you then saw global central banks doubling up their purchase of gold directly after that war started. So I think it's not just a coincidence, but that there are reasons behind gold's move higher after the war started.
Yeah, I want to come to central bankers, but in a note you put out, had an absolutely fascinating chart. I mean, you mentioned China reducing its holding of US treasuries, and it goes back to 2018, but actually it's accelerated since the Ukraine war. I mean, China's down 32%, Brazil's off 15%, Saudi Arabia down 11%, Japan's increased, but there certainly has been, you know, and it's not, as you point out, concerns around the US not paying their debts, they can print the money. It's concerns around that sanctions, which hit Russia. And I mean, China has a tenuous relationship with the US.
Yes, as you rightly point out, the US will always be able to pay its debt. That's why it's always seen as safe. But if the US does not want to pay you the debt, you know, that's as good as them not being able to pay you the debt. And in that chart that I did put out, what I wanted to highlight was that it was China and its BRICS allies that have been selling down debt. However, US allies such as Japan, the UK and Canada have been increasing their purchases of the debt. So, you know, if you are China and you have your ambitions with Taiwan or that regional space, you'd also be concerned watching the US freezing Russia's US debt assets, thinking, well, that could happen to you.
Yeah.
So I think that's the main reason why they've been selling down their US holdings, their debt holdings, and buying gold.
And certainly we have seen it. I mean, we get the World Gold Council report out every quarter. We've seen consistent now for a number of years central bank buying. And I was chatting with them a month or so ago and asked if central bankers price sensitive. And the answer was, well, within reason, but broadly, if they want to buy, I don't know, X tons of gold, they're broadly going to buy it. And the trend is, I don't want to say early days, but it's not something that's going to probably end in a hurry. There's central bank demand for gold probably for a good while, if not, you know, well into the future.
Yeah, that's a good point that you make on the World Gold Council, which I also see. So interestingly enough, in the last 3 months, China hasn't actually bought any extra gold, but the gold price has still been moving up. Other central banks have been buying. So I think, you know, them not buying for 3 months, maybe they are slightly sensitive to the price of gold. But more interestingly for me is that if you look at gold as a percentage of total reserves for China, it's sitting at 4%, where for America it's sitting at 70%. So gold relative to its total reserves for China is still a fraction compared to many of the larger currencies. And China, being such a large exporter that it is sitting with so much reserves, a lot of it in FX reserves. And I think that needs a more of a safe haven home than sitting in dollars.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what about rates? Because, you know, traditionally, if we start to see real rates come down with speed, certainly faster than the market expects, that should be good for gold. Is that still likely to hold? Notwithstanding, I mean, we don't know what Jerome Powell and other central bankers are going to do with rates, but could that still be positive for the metal?
Definitely. When we saw that relationship break down in the Russian invasion, mm-hmm. and that relationship was broken down, I think it's probably a better term to say is that it was dislocated for the time being whilst a bigger structural factor took place, and that being the US freezing Russia's debt. I think as we see in September, when we most likely see the Fed start cutting rates in the US, you'll see gold go even further from here. So I think the only caveat I'd say to gold in the short term is, one, if inflation comes down a lot quicker than expected, and also I say, like, you know, if Trump does come into elections, he might step back and reverse the decision on Russia's debt position. But I think that is probably a short-term effect. I think, you know, as I said, the proverbial Rubicon River has been crossed. And I think, you know, once bitten, twice shy. I don't think anybody's going to trust the states again once they've frozen debt for the first time.
And that's just it. And it comes back to the bullish case for gold, is it remains intact. And there will be, as is always the case, there will be some bips along the way. But there is a fundamental shift that's happened in favor of gold.
Yes, it's structural. There's a long runway to go in terms of looking, as I mentioned, China and other countries, which have such a small position in gold relative to Western countries. And the US debtors, as we say, they are able to pay the debt, but the question is, are they willing to pay their debt? And that, as we've seen, that's not always the case.
Yeah, and that is what, some plus 30 trillion. And that 4% number for gold holdings for China, I hadn't realized it was so low. We'll leave it there. That's Philip Short, fund manager at Flagship Asset Management. Appreciate the time.
Your money can do more when it's investing with conviction. Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to in-depth, broad market research and high-return investment strategies. So invest in a select set of companies with long-term structural growth potential with StanLib's Global Growth Fund. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Paul Wilson, Chief Investment Officer, Sunlum Investments Multi-Manager. Paul, appreciate the time today. The recent piece you put out, talking around what is perhaps going to be the largest transfer of generational wealth as the millennials and the Gen Zs inherit from their parents, their boomer and silent generation parents. I mean, this could be $90 trillion over the next decade.
Yeah, Simon, indeed. Thank you so much for the time. It is going to be a very big transfer of wealth, the biggest in history. That's just in the US alone. I mean, it's not necessarily even taking into account some other parts of the rest of the world. So I do think the millennial generation and the way that they look at the world could shape the way that investments get done if they decide to wealth use in the way that we see the trends emerging. Obviously, these things can change, but with the survey and the work that's been done to see the way millennials think, it certainly looks like a shifting trend if that money gets inherited by the millennial generation.
That's the one thing. I mean, there's a survey that came out that said, what, 4/5, 80% are actually prepared to underperform the S&P if their beliefs are sort of aligned with their investment. And those beliefs are very much around environmental sustainability, minimizing carbon footprint. In essence, this is the ESG generation who are going to be having trillions of dollars to invest.
Yes, indeed, Simon. And I also think it's early stages also in terms of what ESG means. I mean, there's a lot of things that when we talk about sustainable investing, we also need to consider the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And I think a lot of that is also untapped in terms of knowledge base amongst younger generations. So I suspect that this is actually just the beginning of these types of things. And it's interesting to see the results of the survey that say people are prepared to underperform the index to ensure that it aligns with beliefs. I think that speaks to just how passionate younger generations are about belief systems and the way they want the world to go, and potentially things that they've learned from their parents around the world that they didn't want to have. So it's always going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out, but I do think this is early stages still. As I mentioned, I think the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals are another big trend which is going to drive even greater direction and kind of more bespoke views in sustainable investing.
And that perhaps is part of it. Now, I totally get. I mean, I was in a presentation, I mean, probably close to 20 years ago, we were talking around the millennials and their views on the world and, you know, how they would arrive for an interview and want to know what the sustainability and the green credentials were of the company interviewing them. And managers had no clue. The sustainable investment theme, ESG, is, I mean, it's been around for a while, but it's still, truthfully, it's still relatively early days. I mean, if I say value investing, we all know what it is, and it's 100 years old. This is a new theme. There is the UN Sustainable Development Goals, but it's still kind of got to be worked out to a degree.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's where, for example, if you take the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, I mean, one of them, for example, says no poverty. Another one says education, gender diversity. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different ones. And my feeling is that you're going to get more and more investments targeting specific SDGs so that investors can actually choose, well, I'm very passionate about gender equality, or I'm very passionate about education, or I'm very passionate about ending hunger, as an example. And you can actually see probably a proliferation of products starting to appear that target specific nuances. So environment is another one. You know, if you look at a statement like ESG, which I think to be, again, why I agree with you on the fact that it's near the beginning, is that it's quite a narrow definition of what sustainable investing could be. So I think that's where there's probably going to be more development in the space, probably more products launched by various asset managers as they try and look to be more custom and, as I mentioned earlier, bespoke around what types of investments millennials and the younger generations, Gen Z and the like, can actually invest in and where they want to make an impact.
And this, I mean, you've got the Sunlum Living Planet Fund. And, you know, it's still in many cases, I mean, your top holdings are stocks that we recognize. They're just working towards those sort of goals. And I imagine that's the sort of thinking between you and your colleagues when managing that fund. There's no sort of perfect cookie cutter. It's a case of, are these taking us to the right journey, I suppose?
Yeah, and I mean, what's really great about that fund is that it's a partnership with the WWF, who are obviously very pro the environment. And so one of the big drivers in that fund is, how do we get less carbon emissions? So the target is that we've set for ourselves is, let's get less than half the carbon emissions of the index, as an example, both locally and globally. Mm-hmm. So there's a big drive to try and reduce your carbon footprint in the strategy, as well as investing in more positive, proactive types of investments. So, for example, you know, we're looking at various wildlife type bonds. You can get specific instruments which say, let's see if we can help wild dogs or penguins, as an example. So it's getting much more bespoke around the types of instruments that are available to say, well, actually, we want to make a difference in the environment. And it's not just carbon footprints anymore. It could be helping a certain species or conservation, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really exciting to work on that with the WWF because they bring a lot of knowledge from a conservation point of view and high global standards in terms of what's required. And we obviously bring the investment to be able to marry those two things together. So it's really been a very enlightening and good exercise. And I think it's the way that I suspect things are going to move forward, where you get these partnerships with organizations that are really trying to drive positive change in the world and hoping to find the investment opportunities to do that.
Yeah, and I like your point there. It's environmental sustainability. Carbon footprints and the like come into it, but it is that much broader picture, as you mentioned, wild dogs and penguins. Paul Wilson, Chief Investment Officer at Sunlum Investments Multi-Manager. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Attila Kadikoi from Levantine & Co. yesterday. He was making a compelling argument, I thought, around why a stable rand is way better than a stronger rand. You know, if we've got stability, then we can plan. Then it doesn't matter. If I told you the rand's going to be 18.50 for the rest of your life, I mean, taking money offshore, there's no stress. You know, making plans as businesses, etc. We asked you what you thought. Over half said, nope, you want stronger. A third said, yeah, stable is best. And the rest said, weaker to help the exporters. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast
just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening. My guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Women still bearing the brunt of the unemployment crisis.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.